Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how deeply, deeply, deeply grateful, humbled I am that you chose to be with me on this 10th day of March 2019. And we're going to be looking at, a kind of a potpourri of a lot of different things. I love it when students or people listen to this radio program or watch the TV program and have questions about what it is I'm saying. And it's quite moving to me that you pay that much attention. The only way any of this is ever, allowed to be on the air or you listening to it is due to your tax-deductible gifts. It is only through your contributions of sponsorship that I am allowed and honored enough to have the right to be on the air. And I hope that you will consider becoming a sponsor of Aspire. For your sponsorship, you get a lot of very beautiful, beautiful gifts. You really do. And one of them is the message of the month that is sent each and every month. And then twice a month, I create something called the commentary, along with podcasts and video casts. And these are on contemporary issues of spirituality. They're very, very important. They have a great deal of significance if you're serious about changing your life and doing transcending work. And that's not for everybody. Believe me, it's not. You can probably listen to this radio program and understand, I wouldn't want to do all that. And I get it. So you're here to listen, and maybe some of the things I say to you will plant little seeds in you, and that's fine. But there are others of you that are very serious about this inner work, and I understand that. And that's why it is important to keep Aspire on the air. Your donations, your tax-deductible gifts are very, very important. I hope that you will join us in this effort to create some change in this world that is helpful. If you're interested in knowing more about it, please go to the website at aspire.org. You will see support or why support Aspire. And a little drop-down menu will come down, and it will explain everything about your contributions, your tax-deductible gifts. And they still are, no matter what you may think. They are still deductible, and you can still help a lot of people at the same time be helping yourself. You don't want to give it all to Uncle Sam, do you? All right, let's get to the first question from Rich in San Diego. What do I do with my past? How do I love it, as you say? My past was ugly. Rich, I admire you for your courage to admit that and to talk about it here on the radio. Everybody has some ugly stuff they've done in their life. I've done it. You've done it. Everybody's done it. It's that knee-jerk reaction that a lot of us have about our life, about what's going on in our life, what we believe people are doing to us, and whether or not we're victims or anything like that. This goes on and on and on and on in this world, and it isn't going to stop. It never has. It never will. And you need to understand that that was then and this is now. Now, here's the deal. There will be karma for the things you and I do. There will be karma for some of the ugly things that we've all done in our life that we have to deal with. And there isn't anything in this world more powerful, Rich, than to have remorse for what we've done. And if possible, to have a place inside of us where we can give and forgive and ask to be forgiven. This is very hard for the ego. We don't understand our biology. We don't understand the way we work on the inside, basically. And a lot of this is due to the fact of just basic ignorance. We know more about our cars and our homes and how to have a smart home or how to operate the car than we know about ourselves and what constitutes living with ourselves and how we deal with that. So this is really a very important thing we're talking about here today. How do I forgive my past? Rich, you bring up a real important question, and I honor it. There are some things that people have done that I have listened to in the in session work that they just will never forgive themselves for. Things they've said, things they've done, and it just rankles them and causes them a great deal of difficulty. And the reason for all that difficulty is simply because they think they're supposed to perfect the human. We are not here to perfect the human. I want you to understand that deeply. I'm not here, you're not here, to perfect something that can't be perfected. The human part of me cannot be any better than what it is. People will tell you, oh, you could be a better person or be a better person. How are you going to do that? Really? How do you think you're going to do that? Are you going to say different things, do different things? And when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, there will always be something that we do or that we think or that we operate on that defines us for the rest of our life. Something that the ego just can't stand or is very difficult for us to understand ourselves or difficult for us to work through because our ego and our pride gets involved and there you are. It gets uglier and uglier and uglier. So you ask me, how do I love your past and do as I say? If you're a meditator, if you practice meditation at all, you practice this art of yielding to your heart, yielding to the state of your heart and recognizing the beauty of your soul. And should you be willing to do something like that, to really get involved in something like that, there is this awakening that occurs, and you are no longer subject any longer to the ideas and ideals of what it is to suffer grievously due to genetic nature. Most of us do not understand how we work. You have your DNA, which promotes fear through survival, and then you have your genetics. And these genetic traits are the things that determine how I'm going to interpret my DNA and how I operate from the inside of myself. How am I going to make a living? How am I going to do things and get along with people that promote not only my well-being, but other people's well-being? And that's the issue, because a lot of people don't want to do anything that promotes another person's well-being. Why? Well, it takes away, I've heard this, from them. You know, well, why should I do that for you? I don't get it. Why should I do that for you? You wouldn't do it for me. That kind of thing. So this goes on and on and on within people, and they never mature or grow. And here is where we're at. So I'm saying to you, in loving maturity, in learning how to mature, you awaken to a part of yourself that is beyond the concept of right and wrong. You have to get to a place somehow within you where the goodness of your heart outweighs the desire and ambition and pride you have for the state of your life. And that is very, very important. I can't get you there. And there's nothing in your genetics that can get you there. There's nothing in your DNA that will get you there. Absolutely nothing. You need to understand that. This process that I'm talking about, a spiritual process, goes on and on and on within us to the point where if you really get it, you really, really get it, you understand why you're here on earth and what it means to be kind, what it means to be loving, what it means to have a sense of a higher purpose in this lifetime. And that is something I can't give you. You have to get that for yourself. You have to understand that for yourself. So that's the deal there. I wish I could give you more on that subject, but I can't. This whole lifetime is about understanding the nature of love that lives within you. And should you understand that nature of love and seek it above everything in your life, it will change everything in your life. Something for you to think about. Rich, thank you for your beautiful question. You know, a lot of my answers are dependent upon the determination, the inner determination a person has to awaken spiritually. And some people just don't have it. The majority of people in this world just don't have it. So a lot of times what you hear me saying just doesn't click. Not because it isn't true, but because you're not there yet. But one day you will be there. One day it will happen. Maybe not in this lifetime, but one day. And when it does, believe it or not, you'll be able to call all of this up and you will remember. Trust me on that one. Please forgive me. Namaste. It is true. It is true. I sat in India for many years. I've sat with myself in many years, learning how to, you know, spiritually come to a place where it matters. Spiritual work matters. And it's funny how you remember things that you were told that you had easily forgotten because you just didn't, well, you weren't able to receive it at that time. And I'm very patient with my students about that. Next one comes from Robbie in Costa Mesa. Greg, I've known you for years. Tell me about this thing called love. Can anyone really know it for true, Robbie? Robbie's a lady who used to come to the center when I was teaching formerly in Escondido. Robbie, love is all you can know. In fact, believe it or not, even at this stage in our life, we know love. We do. We just don't live it, and we don't give it much credence because we put the ego ahead of love, which means I have no soul. When you have a sense of your soul, love is always first. Nothing else matters but love. Nothing else matters but yielding to love. It doesn't matter what people think or what they want or what they believe in, or it doesn't matter. You come to a certain place where it all just doesn't matter. But when there is only emotionality involved in the course of a lifetime, and we're only full of emotion, then love takes on another flavor. It takes on another concept, another belief. And I think it's very, very important that we understand what that all means. Emotional love is not like authentic love. Emotional love lives under the auspice of the ego. Spiritual love lives under the auspice of the soul. It really is that easy. But to get to that place, there must be a great deal of what I call forsaking, discipline, being willing to give up things that basically are trivial when it comes to the deeper meaning of life. One day you're going to drop this body, Robbie. As I told you many, many years ago when I was in discourse and teaching formally, you're going to drop this body and everything that is the accoutrement of this body will be lost in that moment. And the funny thing about it is, in my work at hospice, I see it over and over again, you won't care. In fact, you will look at it and think to yourself, why did I waste so much time on that? It didn't matter. Now, I'm paraphrasing, and I'm taking liberties right now about saying, you know, you'll think. You won't be thinking. You won't be needing to think, but you will realize what you did, how much you did, and what the whole thing was all about. And that will cause enough of a change in your life to bring about, hopefully, a more conscious life, a more daring life in spirituality, rather than the audaciousness of living from the ego, which most of us live from and become very petty in. When you think of teachers and what they are teaching, most teachers are teaching you how to be petty, how to control your life, how to have the right thinking. That's not what this thing is about. That's not the way. That's not even remotely the way. But this is the way people like to believe and think. If I want a better life, that's all people want. Love has nothing to do with a better livingness in this world. Love is life. Love is the goodness that goes beyond the ideals of my mind that tell me that goodness is anything that is the brocade of my ego weaving itself around and decorating my life with stupidities, assumptions, pettiness. Most of us are very petty people, let's face it. That's why we have a very difficult time awakening, because we want to cling on to our pettiness rather than release it and go into the deep love of our life. So you ask me, Greg, I know you, and I wish you really did, but you say, love, can anyone really know it? That's all you can do is know it. You can't think it. You can't believe in it. You can't want it. You can only know it. And the way you begin that process is by dropping the mind and the emotions that are attached to our thinking, and that our emotions create our thinking. When you are no longer interested in those emotions, of fulfilling them in any way, shape, or form, you will enter into a brand new sphere of living, something that is totally different from anything you have ever known in your entire lifetime. And you will find yourself in a brand new place. This place is not a place of thought. You won't need thought. My students are always thinking. They think in polarities. Negative, positive. Right, wrong. Good, bad. And no matter how I tell them, don't think in polarities. Don't do that. Think no thought, which means not producing thinking. What I'm talking about in no thought is a mind not contemplating the strategy of any situation to try to derive the best out of it. Now, that's very difficult for the human mind to consider. In fact, most of us won't consider it. It can't be done. A mind no longer interested, as Buddha said, in right and wrong, good and bad. This is a no mind that we talk about in Zen, and it is extremely beautiful. And it isn't just Zen. It is anything. It is anything that is meaningful to our heart. It is seeking the soul of our life. Seeking the soul. Of being aware of it. This is love at its deepest place. And this soul that I speak of is the formatting of my entire life into a state of love that offers nothing but forgiveness, compassion, and the whole opportunity to change everything that is occurring day to day, moment to moment, from within me. That is the real key. How few of us do that, how few of us long for that, how few of us are interested in that, which is why the world is the way the world is, because that's the way we are. We never quite understand why the world is the way it is, and thinking that we're not a part of all that corruption, but we are, every one of us. You need to read some commentaries that I've written, Robbie. You know how I am. Maybe that would be the next step for you. Thank you for your beautiful email. Thank you for watching the Aspire TV programs. And thank you for this beautiful opportunity to serve you. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. Love for me turns to hate very quickly. I see it in my marriage, and it's shocking to me. Sophie. Yes, the one you married, Sophie. I understand. Marriage is a tricky business. They wear out very quickly. And people have to find a reason to stay married. Normally, it's the kids or money. It's just too much trouble to pull up stakes and all that stuff. I don't want to even get into the legal ramifications of it, but it's ugly. It really is. And you really find out who you married when you have to divorce. So the thing is, love, you say, for me, turns to hate because it is emotional. Your love is not authentic. It is emotional. And when love is allowed to be nothing but passion and emotion, desire, ambition, all of that, a way to seek comfort and security, then you have missed the whole trip. And you have missed what marriage could really be all about and how beautiful it could be. But Sophie, you have to understand, the marriage is not the difficulty. The marriage is the opportunity. It is the mechanism that is going to teach you how you love, what the Buddha said. See how you love and what keeps you from the journey. Can you see how you love and what has kept you from the journey of your life? What is the quality of your love? Do you like being the victim? Do you like making other people the victim? Do you like the whole idea of trying to get what you want at all costs? Do you think you're entitled? There's so many things to look at in the course of a person's lifetime. So you got to ask yourself, what is this all about? What are we really doing when we get married? If you understand any and all of this, you will understand why you turn to hate. Some people aren't meant to be married. Some people are. A lot of the people that are married think that they're meant to be married, but they suffer through their marriages and in deep sadness because they truly realize within themselves they shouldn't be married. But pride, ego, children, complications all get involved. And then before you know it, you lose your ability to understand what it is to be true to thy own self. Know thyself, be true to it, to see yourself for the way you are and not the way you would like to be or imagine yourself to be. In marriage, you get to see all sorts of mental and emotional difficulties that we get involved in. These mental and emotional difficulties never go away. They never do. They stay there until we confront them, until we deal with them. Marriage can be a very valuable experience if allowed, but for most of us, it isn't a valuable experience. It is one more experience where we add to the idea of I was right, she or he was wrong, and it doesn't go very far. Most of the people I know who are married, frankly, aren't happy. Not all, but most. And they tell me this on the QT. And I understand why. I do. It's not an easy thing to do. And it has a lot to do with emotionality. What you were when you met isn't what you are now. The way you felt when you met was different than the way you feel now in general. Who you were then is not who you are now. So it's a very difficult thing to deal with. And I get it. But the truth of the matter is, you have to find it within yourself. It's not in the other person. And if you insist that your marriage be about other people, and if you insist upon the idea that it's their problem if they don't love you or they're doing things you don't like or whatever, you need to really assess the value of how much your heart matters to you and whether or not you're ready to deal with the ability to enter into the authentic heart. And to eventually realize the depth of the soul, which is what it's all about. I got to get out of here. I ran out of time. I could go on. Thank you Thank you, Sophie, for your beautiful question. Please forgive me and thank all of you for listening. I'll be back on the air next week. Have a beautiful weekend. And once again, as always, please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.